This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it's Friday, the 13th of October, but I don't know that things could get worse for anyone at this point. So I'm not superstitious because the world is falling apart around us. What can I say? I have been looking forward to having this guest on forever. And judging by all the feedback I've gotten on social media and by email and by text, so have you. Let me tell you about her. Dr. Sheila Lowenzon is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist with over 15 years of patient care. She offers women specific tools to shift their perspective, gain insight, and move forward confidently. Dr. Lowenzon received her BA in biochemistry at Vassar College and completed medical school at the College of Osteopathic Medicine of the Pacific. She's been recently promoted to Assistant Chief of Obstetrics and Gynecology at a large multi-specialty practice in California. And she also happens to be the author of an incredible book called Yes, I Have Herpes. We are going to get to ask all the questions we want to ask of our OBGYNs, but many of us can't for one reason or another. So welcome to Sex Out Loud, Dr. Sheila.
Thank you so much. I'm just so delighted to be here.
So I wonder from the beginning, what made you decide to go into obstetrics and gynecology? So you're in medical school, and I know you have the chance to kind of explore all these different specialties, and what drew you to this one?
It's really interesting. So I started out medical school wanting to be a hematology oncologist, pretty much fancy words for being a cancer doctor. My dad had passed away from brain cancer when I was 20. And so I really felt like that was an area that I really wanted to dive into until I realized when I actually got to medical school that the subject matter was just way over my head. And I just didn't have the personality, I think, to be working with these patients. I'm very upbeat, sometimes, silly, like to laugh a lot. And that's really just not the specialty to be that kind of a person. And so I thought pediatrics and then internal medicine. And then I just fell in love with OBGYN. It was a wonderful mix of surgery. I'm very tactile. I like to work with my hands. I'm very procedural. It's a little bit of family medicine where there's just a longevity and people come to you wanting help, whether it's I do not want to get pregnant. Okay, now I can't get pregnant. Please, I would love to have a healthy baby. Okay, now I'm bleeding too much and now I'm peeing all over the place. So it was this really wonderful kind of longitudinal ability to be with the patients. And there's a little bit of emergency room medicine. When you're on labor and delivery, you have to think really fast. I'm someone who could make split decisions, life-altering decisions at 3 a.m. And I don't need like a cup of coffee or something to do it. I can just kind of get up and go. And so just, it really fit my personality. And women just felt really comfortable kind of telling me their inner darkest secrets. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what I do in the office, but it's just really having a listening, non-judgmental ear. And I think people just really pick up on that and just kind of blurt out the things that they've never really said to anybody before. And so I just felt that that was a really wonderful niche to be in, and to be able to offer that kind of support to people is just really unique.
But you being non-judgmental and everyone spilling their secrets to you is actually unfortunately unique, because what I hear over and over and what I've certainly experienced as a patient is that there are a ton of OBGYNs out there who are, one, not well informed about sex and sexuality, or two, and or uncomfortable talking about sex. Why is that?
I think it just comes down to the culture that we are in America. You know, historically, our society has not been one to really openly speak about sex and the issues that come with it. And now we're in this whole new culture of a lot of mixed, in quotes, lines and blurring. And so if you're from an older generation, you're just kind of like, what is going on? And so, you know, we had diversity training in my department, and I mean, it was just blowing the minds off of some of my colleagues. And I'm just kind of like, listen, this is where we're at right now. Like, we really need this education because we want to be there for our patients. And so whether that means that those patients get filtered to me just by natural trait of it all, you know, is totally fine. My genre seems to be the teenage 20 and 30 year olds, you know, so it fits, and we're all different. And the needs of one patient might fit well with one clinician, and the needs of another will fit with somebody else. And you just have to find the person that works the best for you. But that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of doing all of this stuff, is because I want to be able to answer the questions that maybe some people don't feel comfortable to ask. And maybe we can together, I may not know the answer, but maybe logically we can try to tease out what exactly is the answer.
And I don't know what the stats are, but why are there so many male gynecologists? And it doesn't even seem like it's 50-50 with men and women.
The trend is changing. So, I mean, if you really think about the broadness of just medical people in general, it was very heavily male dominant. And it's really starting to trend a little bit differently. And I will be so proud. I am so proud of the medical group that I work for, because it actually is 50-50, which in a lot of other places, it's not. Even more so in obstetrics and gynecology, it's actually kind of flipped, just because women just feel more comfortable with women. However, you know, for our parents and the generations before us, it really was just men clinicians. So you just went with who you went with. But now women do have a choice. And I've discovered a lot of women just feel more comfortable speaking to, you know, same sex providers.
So we had a ton of questions posted on social media, and actually some of my friends texted me questions too. Apparently everyone wants to talk to the gynecologist today.
Yeah.
The first question that came to me on Facebook was actually shocking to me, but I really appreciate the person's honesty. Okay. It comes from Lisa on Facebook, and she says, "Don't you get a little grossed out by looking at genitals all day?"
So, you know, I don't think so. I guess that's just kind of the nature of the profession, just for the same reason that dentists deal with certain things, podiatrists, and I will tell you, I think dentists and podiatrists deal with worse things than what I have to deal with. And so, you know, I don't notice anymore. I will tell you that anatomy itself from women to women is actually all fairly similar, even though I know people want to be like, I'm so unique and I'm incredible, which is so true. Everybody is, but it is actually all the same. First off, as an OBGYN, I do not breathe through my nose anymore. So that kind of eliminates that aspect of it. And really, it's still a clinical diagnosis. I'm not, you know, going up to a bar and being like, hey, can I do your pap smear? We're in a clinical situation. I'm wearing a white coat. You know, we're there to identify a certain thing. So I don't see it as something that's gross or disgusting so much as just there perhaps is an issue that you would like an answer on, or your partner says that you have, and it may or may not be true, but let's go ahead and make sure that your health, really, that's the most important, that your health is in its top form.
Well, I was just struck by this question, especially as someone who follows me on social media or listens to the show, because I feel like it speaks to all of this shame that lots of women have about their own genitals. Right? That the way they feel about their vulva is that it smells, or it's not pretty, or it's gross, or they've been shamed in some way by partners or other people. Do people like ever communicate that to you, that they're feeling insecure about how they look?
I think what ends up happening is that, you know, I do the pap smears on the 21-year-olds, you know, first time ever really anybody has examined them down there. And I do get aspects of shyness. And a lot of that is, improve just by speaking through the examination. I get a lot of even older women that say, you know, that part down there, that thing. And I'm just like, you have to use your words. What do you mean? And so, you know, men themselves are, you know, drawing their penises all over their homework and, you know, when they're 7 years old and grabbing themselves and doing all this stuff. And as women, we just were not taught to do that. And so I think that we're in this really wonderful precipice of change, just with all the sex ed that's coming out and all the education and the awareness and the advocates. So I think we're in a trend of it changing, but a lot of women are very shy. And I don't know if it's because our, you know, our organs are internal, therefore our feelings are internal. But at the same time too, everyone is beautiful. Scents, vaginal scents are normal. Don't, you know,
unless they're not, but then, you know, that's why you're at the doctor.
Exactly. Right. And sometimes too, even just people coming in and me reassuring them, all of a sudden they're just like, oh, okay, what a relief, you know? And that's just reassurance. It's all about reassurance.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we've somehow come to our first commercial break. First of all, I want you guys to know you can call and talk to us because we are live. You can call 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. If you're not listening live and you have a question or comment, you can always leave it on our voicemail, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. And I also want to tell you that Dr. Loenzon is actually on vacation in Maui right now, where she's doing this interview via Skype. So, like, wow. So extra props and special thanks to the compassionate gynecologist who also takes an hour out of her time in Maui to talk to us about this.
It's important.
We've got lots of questions. There definitely was one about a first-time exam. So I want to get to that when we get after the break. But for now, let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Dr. Sheila Loenzon. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone. I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, do you know what's happening this weekend? I've been telling you about it for quite some time. Sex Educator Bootcamp Level 2, the live online seminar, begins this Sunday, October 15th, and then continues October 17th. Both classes are online at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and you can sign up at sexeducatorbootcamp.com. First of all, if you've never taken Sex Educator Bootcamp Level 1, you can do that. Or if you already have taken number one, or you're already practicing some kind of sex education and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business and get paid for what you love doing, then you've got to take my class, people. I am going to give you tons and tons of information based on my experience. I'm going to give you skills. I'm going to give you strategies. I'm going to give you tools and insight to help you create a vibrant, fulfilling career in sex education. So please join me Sunday, and you can go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com to find out all about it and to sign up for both one and two or both. Hope I see some of you online on Sunday. We are talking today with OBGYN, Dr. Sheila Lowenzon. And before the break, you were talking about first timers coming to your office. And we have a question about that. Our question comes from Ruby on Facebook. In your opinion, how important is the conversation with the patient and gynecologist with a first time exam? Personally, my first visit was directive rather than collaborative. I was 14 years old and my mother decided I needed to get on birth control. I'm from a military family and the choice of provider was not an option. Mm-hmm. The OBGYN was male. He had huge fingers and he was not very cognizant of my first time experience. Mm-hmm. The nurse was standing next to me, holding my hand, telling me to breathe. I saw jelly on two fingers inserted and the coldness of the speculum. And I avoided the gynecologist for a while. Mm. How often do you see psychological repercussions later in life as a result of a painful or uninformed or negative first gynecological visit? It's not uncommon for me as a therapist to have clients with vulvas report a contentious and avoidant relationship with gynecological health. And these folks can range anywhere from 20 to 60 years old. Mm-hmm. Are there best practices for first-time visits?
Wow, that is a fantastic question. So, you know, I realize when patients come to the gynecologist, that is by far the most vulnerable experiences that they can go through because the genitalia is so very sensitive. The sexual intake and experience can be very dramatic, and it can absolutely deter people from wanting to see a gynecologist in the future. I will say that I would love to believe that all of my colleagues and I are there for the best gynecologic health that we can offer to a patient. So our goal is not to in any way ever want to hurt someone. And certainly, you know, various childhood traumas or, you know, previous histories of sexual assault can play a role without the gynecologist really even knowing because it may not be disclosed. And so we really want to be very sensitive, but at the same time, too, we know that we may not be able to assure you of everything. Most of the things that I end up telling patients is I actually explain the first time that they come into the office what we're going to be doing. So a lot of times it's not uncommon for me to come into the office and be like, first off, just breathe. Just breathe. We're not even going to do anything. I just want to talk and get to know you. And then that's when you can really find out a medical history. Why are you here? Because a lot of any counseling that I do afterwards may circle back to a history that is important in terms of my diagnosis and treatment and the best options for you. Past that, then we talk about what are we going to do. So you have a full expectation of what the exam should be like. And if you aren't getting that from your clinician, just ask. And you can say, I'm very nervous. This is my first time. Can you walk me through absolutely everything you're going to do? Most patients will actually say to me, wow, you talk a lot more than most of my other doctors. And believe me, I love to freaking talk. But at the same time, too, I'm also talking to calm you down and to explain everything that we're doing. The times have changed a little bit. Very rarely would we do an exam on a 14-year-old unless there was something significantly going on, especially if it was someone who was virginal. Mm-hmm. Now, if they were coming in thinking that it was an STD and they had been sexually active and they're having pelvic pain, I think that there might be a mass in the abdomen. Sure, that would be an appropriate person to do an exam on. But most of the times, most of us will save an exam, particularly if she was just coming in for birth control, until they're 21. Mm-hmm. The timeline has changed a little bit. When I was growing up, it was actually 18 years old to start seeing a gynecologist. It's now actually changed to being 21. Now, a lot of women are sexually active before then, in which mm-hmm. case it might be worthwhile to see your gynecologist to talk about contraception, safe sex, feeling safe in a relationship. You know, those are important things. Vaccines. Those are all important things to talk about at that time. But a pelvic exam and a pap smear is not necessary until you're 21. Now, STD screening might be something else. But the great thing is we can also do a lot of checks just by checking urine. So, you know, you can kind of eliminate that whole pelvic exam to begin with. And so when you actually end up doing the pelvic exam, just having a clinician say, and this is one of the things that I do, like, okay, my fingers are up here by your knees, and now they're scooting down, okay, and then right here I'm at the introitus, or I'm right at the opening, here is the speculum, and then I actually have my colleagues, or I actually have my patients, we do yoga breathing. So breathing and yoga in general and anything just helps to calm the nervous system. It actually helps to confuse the nerves a little bit. So we do yoga breathing. And so when I start to insert the speculum, everybody takes a big deep breath in. And my assistant does it too. We all do it. Everybody's breathing in the room. So everybody breathes in, and then the speculum goes in, and everybody breathes out. And then everybody breathes in, and then that's when the speculum opens. Then quickly do the pap smear, do whatever test, and then you're out. So it really, it depends. And I would encourage women, I think that it's important. If you don't feel comfortable with your clinician, you can leave. You can, I mean, we won't be hurt, to tell you the truth, you know. And you can simply say, you can even interview your clinician, and you can say, this is my first time, I just want to make sure I feel comfortable with you, you know, what's your approach, you know, and you can go through it that way. And if you have someone who actually gets huffy and puffy about that, then they may not be the best person for you, because in the end, we're in an industry to serve and offer and evaluate patients, not to demean, you know, bully, anger, upset, you know, we don't want to do that for patients. So,
Okay. I've got another question. Now we're in the realm of infections. This person says, I get bacterial vaginosis after sex, oral and or penetrative with a new partner. Mm-hmm. How can I avoid this? Is there anything I can do, or do I just have delicate flora?
Yeah. So actually, bacterial vaginosis, yeast infections are actually very quite common. And one of the reasons why they happen is because of a change in the vaginal pH. And so if you seem to find that your trigger happens to be with a new partner, one of the things that you can consider doing is using a condom, because some studies have shown that the pH of the ejaculate and the sperm is what causes the change in the vaginal tissue. So if you, you know, have a little experiment and see what happens when you use a condom when you're sexually active, and see if that happens to change any triggers, that might be one way to prevent it. But studies have shown that first partners is a high likelihood of bacterial vaginosis. Oral sex is also another one of the causes. Now, whether you, you know, after your sexual activity, go to the restroom and kind of rinse off, not with soap, you know, because the vaginal tissue is very sensitive, but just with kind of just water and kind of cleanse it, I find some patients find that that actually is better. I do encourage things like probiotics. I do not encourage things like douching. And I would, of course, encourage healthy diet and exercise, because I think that helps clear toxins. You know, plenty of water flushes out the toxins, keeps the body in a great balance, and it's just good for you in general. But it's not uncommon for people to do that. Some people say that maybe it's a, in quotes, allergic reaction to your partner, and maybe your body isn't really meshing well with your partner. I don't know about that.
right.
But I think at the same time too, you know, if you can help prevent it, because, you know, those antibiotics can be really tough on the GI system. So, and to be on antibiotics chronically is very kind of frustrating and annoying too. So any way that you can prevent any exposures is always best for you.
Okay, this question comes on Twitter from Zoe, who says, I'm a 30-year-old, I'm child-free, and I'm on my second Mirena IUD. I'm very interested in tubal ligation in the next couple of years. What would you recommend?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And it's a lot of people, actually, let me back up. A lot of women are really entertaining this idea. You know, we're an empowered society right now, and women have their thought process, and this is what we're going to do. And, you know, let's just nip it off at the pass and make sure no babies happen. So a tubal ligation is considered permanent and irreversible. So you really have to make sure that this is for certain what you want to do. At 30 years old, there's always a possibility that 10 years down the line, you can meet the man of your dreams and you've done a tubal ligation and the only thing left is IVF, which can cost $20,000 to $30,000 to get it done. And the other important thing too is that an IUD, the great thing about that is it's controlling for your period. And that's awesome because not only are you getting a great contraceptive in the 99% range, but you're also getting a control of your menses, not having to worry about it during your busy day. If tubal ligation is something you're interested in, it's important to know that when you're 30 years old, there's a high likelihood of failure. So there's always a possibility you could end up with an ectopic pregnancy. There's a possibility you could still end up being pregnant and not, you know, be expecting it. And so it's not always 100% guaranteed. The only thing that's 100% is actually removing your uterus completely. And so a lot of clinicians, because of that possibility of in 10 years you might change your mind, are hesitant to do it. You could keep counseling with someone over and over and over again and see if maybe they'll see your side, but you really have to convince them and you really have to put in the time to be able to convince them to get them to do it because, you know, it's tough. You know, it would be different if this person had some, you know, chronic disease where if she was to get pregnant, she could die and, you know, it just, or she could pass something on to her children and she doesn't want that risk. That would be something totally different than, I just don't want kids, so let's just go ahead and get it out.
This is fascinating because, like, just simply the desire, the desire to never have children, you're telling me, like, if someone presents that in one meeting, most people are not going to do it.
No, I mean, I have had some people who will do it, however, after like 4 or 5 counseling sessions to really make sure, like a month apart, to really make sure, because to take away someone's fertility, we really want to make sure that they understand, you know, what's going on. Is it coming off of a breakup? Is it, you know, an emotional decision? Is this really what they want to do? And, you know, I have plenty of friends who say, listen, I'm never having children. I love traveling and I love all my money and I don't want to give it to children. And, you know, and that's fine, except it's important that, you know, before a surgeon goes and takes them to surgery and let's say we hit your bowel by accident, that you really understood those risks. You know, it's a big deal, even though I know it's a woman's choice whether or not to reproduce.
Okay, we are going to take another commercial break. In the next segment, we are going to talk about Dr. Sheila's controversial book, Yes, I Have Herpes. Oh my God, a gynecologist with herpes. Yes, people, it happens. And we have a herpes question. So those will like fit in really nice.
Perfect.
And I'm going to talk about my own gynecological issues. Here you go, folks. Things I've never talked about publicly, you're going to hear about my reproductive system. So get ready to take notes and call TMZ later. But first, let me tell you that the Pleasure Chest, my amazing sponsor, always has free classes in their Pleasure Ed program. And these are the ones that are coming up. The classes are from 8 to 10 p.m. and they're always free. In Los Angeles, October 15th, Gender Neutral Striptease with Michelle LaBelle. And it's actually at 7 p.m., not 8 p.m. The rest are at 8. October 18th, Role Play Cosplay Costumery with Victor and Carly, also in LA. October 18th in New York City, Sex Magic with Carly. And October 18th in Chicago, OMG Spot with Malik. Go to pleasurechest.com to find out about these classes and more. Stay with us more with, obviously, a much needed conversation with a gynecologist. So don't go anywhere. Hey everyone, I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators' picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase. Are you LGBTQIA? Genderqueer or gender variant, a sex worker, an activist, a polyamorous person? Well, the open list features therapists, sexuality and relationship coaches, traditional and alternative healthcare providers, mediators, lawyers, and more who are poly aware, kink competent, sex positive, queer affirming, and anti-oppression. They work with clients with alternative sexualities and relationship structures, including open relationships, polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, swinging, BDSM, and kink. They serve the unique needs of folks who think and live outside the box. To search for a professional in your area, go to the open list at openingup.net. If you're a professional who'd like to be listed, use the coupon code OPENTRIAL for a free 1-year trial.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Oh, hey, I forgot to give you our number again if you want to talk to our guest live. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. And I want to tell you that there are less than 7 rooms left for this amazing vacation. Swing Set takes over Desire in Cancun. I'm going to be there teaching and also socializing and playing and having fun. It's November 4th to the 11th. There's less than 7 rooms left. You got to book yours today. Go to ssdesire.com. We've been talking today with Dr. Sheila Lonzon, and she has a credential that maybe not every gynecologist has, which is she's written a book. Sure, lots of gynecologists have written a book, but she's actually written a book called Yes, I Have Herpes, which is pretty extraordinary and stigma busting of you. Mm-hmm. And we have a herpes question. So first I want to ask the herpes question, and then I want to get into your story. Mm-hmm. Can someone have herpes and not show any signs at all and not be contagious?
So there can be, that's a big question. So herpes is a skin infection that can be shed regardless of if someone has an outbreak or not. Some of the difficulty with herpes is that it can be diagnosed off of a blood test. And blood tests can sometimes be inappropriate in terms of letting people know if they do or don't have herpes. And so if someone tests positive for the blood test and have never had an outbreak, some providers would tell them that, oh, you have just been exposed, but there's no evidence of any outbreaks. You're fine. There's no need to tell partners. However, I actually do think that that special community are at risk of spreading the virus to other people, because even if they've been exposed, it's possible that that virus may be there and be spreading to other people if you're having sexual intimacy without protection. And I know that a lot of...
So they can have no symptoms and still spread it.
Absolutely. Mm. And I actually think that that's one of the reasons why this virus is so prevalent. A lot of my colleagues would probably say, Sheila, you're crazy. That's not true. That's not what the CDC has been teaching us. And really, we go off of these big governing bodies like the CDC, like the American Board of OBGYNs. But at the same time, too, those people who test positive by blood, I think that they are very vulnerable to be passing it to other people without knowing it. And that's how everybody's all of a sudden, then their partner is diagnosed and they're wondering, where the heck did that come from? Mm. And I think that that's how it's all spreading. It's a very difficult virus to figure out.
Well, and what made you decide that you were going to come out about you having herpes and sort of tell the world? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I actually was diagnosed when I was 20 years old, and I really did not actually face having the virus for about 15 years. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell myself. I didn't tell my family. And I was realizing that by hiding this huge part of myself and yet being a person who's trying to educate all of my patients, there was like a huge disconnect. And it was really confusing me. And I was looking for something in my relationships. And I was working with an executive coach at the time. And he's just like, you know, there's just something that's not really clicking. And I'm just kind of like, do you think it's the fact that I have herpes and I've never really told anybody? And he's like, yes. He's like, if you are looking in the mirror and you're thinking, I'm not worth it, I feel dirty, there's something wrong with me, how can you possibly ever attain anything that is great and pure and deserved? And so, you know, being this Dr. Lewanzen and then being this Sheila, it was really difficult. And so until I melded those things together and really accepted everything about myself that I was perhaps ashamed, embarrassed, scared, afraid to open up to other people, I actually, once I loved all of those things about myself, I actually opened up like a whole new world and got everything that I actually wanted. And so I thought that by sharing my story and letting people know, hey, I'm a professional, I'm not the stereotypical herpes person, and I'm living out here and I'm thriving and I have a wonderful life, and here are the tools that I used, and I hope that it helps you too, then I figured I will step forward and be that person, because there's not a role model out there. And if I can be the person that people can look up to and be like, hey, she's doing really great, she hasn't, you know, been traumatized, you know, there are going to be trolls out there. There are people who are going to have opinions, but the vast majority of my community in medicine and beyond and social media are like, yay, we need a spokesperson. That's great. Like, let's get the word out there and let's normalize this conversation. Because more often than not, there's probably someone in your circle who has it and hasn't had the confidence or, you know, the society supporting them to feel confident about it.
Now, I think one of the biggest issues for folks who have an STI or who have herpes is disclosing to a partner, especially a new partner. Mm-hmm. And I would assume this is twice as hard for you, because we make assumptions about people all the time, but by the way they look and, you know, who we decide like couldn't possibly have an STI and who could. Mm-hmm. And I think the assumption about a gynecologist is, oh my God, well, she has her shit together. She knows how to get this stuff, and she knows how, and so of course she doesn't have any STIs. So how is it, like, what are your recommendations for disclosing to people?
Yeah, I mean, and my story about it too is I was a virgin. I was a virgin before I got it. I actually got it from an oral cold sore from a partner who didn't even have an outbreak. And we didn't even know that that's how it could be transferred. I mean, talk about stereotype. I mean, I was not promiscuous. I was older, you know, I mean, it's dramatic. But usually I would tell people, in terms of disclosure, it's important to do it when you feel comfortable. So I encourage people to say probably the second or third date, I think, would be important, because you're still trying to figure out if you like this person. What if you don't like the way that they chew their dinner? I mean, you meet for cocktails and you may not like the way that they, you know, do certain things. So I always ended up disclosing when I thought that this was a relationship that I could possibly be interested in. And I chose some place that was quiet, so there wasn't a possibility that a, you know, waiter could come in and interrupt me in the middle of my big spiel. And I would encourage people to have, you know, just some small facts. They don't have to, you know, Wikipedia the whole experience, but, you know, just kind of have a few concrete facts to tell the person. I would encourage breathing. I think that that's always really important. And then I would encourage some people to have a script. because sometimes you just lose your words. And if worse comes to worse, you can always look down and you can read. The first time I disclosed was pretty difficult, and I was shaking and I was like, oh my gosh, and trembling. And he could tell that I was like trying to dig into something really deep. So he was very attentive and supportive. And then as disclosures went on, it was just kind of like, hey, this is who I am. If you're not into it, no big deal. There's a ton of other guys down the line that are just waiting to meet me. And so, you know, you from each experience you learn, and you can't expect to do it perfectly the first time every time. And while my platform is herpes, I think that it could translate to so many different things that people have that they may feel ashamed of. You know, whether it's their weight, whether it's endometriosis, whether it's infertility, whether it's, you know, a past that they're ashamed of, it all translates to the same platform, which is learning to love yourself and accept yourself. And in the end, if it ends up just being you standing your confident self and maybe you don't need anybody around you, that's so much better than being in a situation where you're feeling suffocated and having difficulty, you know, moving forward.
Okay, well, we had a lot of questions about this, and you just mentioned it. So it's time to talk about endometriosis. And mm-hmm. I have not talked publicly. I talk publicly a lot about my body and the sex I have, but I haven't talked publicly about my own endometriosis diagnosis. I, for a year and a half, was having chronic pelvic pain. Pelvic pain to the point of passing out, of going to the emergency room, of vomiting. And I was having irregular periods. Mostly I would have a regular period and then I would have spotting throughout the rest of the month to the point where sometimes I was bleeding almost every day. I probably saw, when you combine the emergency room visits, probably 8 different gynecologists. And I had... It was the year of the transvaginal ultrasound. Remember when they were talking about how everyone who had an abortion had to have a transvaginal ultrasound? Well, I had like 8 that year. And basically, I was told over and over, you know, we can put you on birth control. But other than that, you're just having kind of wacky periods and you're having painful periods, which I'd never had before. But we don't see anything on the ultrasound. And lots of people did a lot of ultrasounds and looked at those ultrasounds. And they were like, we don't really see anything. And I had one woman gynecologist in the emergency room when my pain is at a 10 tell me, I have no reason for why you're in this much pain. There's nothing. There's nothing there. Eventually, my gynecologist said, okay, you know, the only way to really know is to go in there. And if you're willing to do that, we'll do some exploratory surgery. And obviously if there is endometriosis, I'm going to take it out. And it ended up being kind of a disaster in there. She was like, it's not the most I've ever seen, but like the worst case, but like, you know, it's in like the top 5. And I ended up losing one of my ovaries and one of my fallopian tubes. And I had a lot of endometrial tissue on my bowel, which had to be repaired. It was like a very long surgery and it was complicated. And so we have to take a commercial break. I want that all to sink in. But I want to know why endometriosis is so hard to diagnose and why... this experience, when I tell people about it, people often say I had a similar experience and it turned out I had cysts or I had fibroids or but they went sort of from person to person and basically people had no explanation for why their period had gone haywire or why they were having some kind of pelvic system symptoms. So let's take a commercial break. And when we come back, I want to hear your take on what happened to me and more information about endometriosis, which is a really serious condition. And for me was debilitating for almost a year until they figured it out. So let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Dr. Lowenzon. Hey everyone, I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators' picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking to OBGYN, Dr. Sheila Lowenzon, and I told my story about essentially being told nothing was wrong with me, except for one person who said you might have uterine cancer, but then they tested for that and said, okay, no, you don't. But everyone else told me there was nothing on the ultrasound and there was nothing there, and they couldn't explain the bleeding or the pelvic pain. What is your take on this story?
Tristan, I feel for you. It's actually, that is a very, very common story that people have. So a little bit of background. Endometriosis is essentially, it's called retrograde menstruation. Fancy words for when someone has a period, usually it comes out one hole out the vagina, which is why you need a tampon. What ends up happening with endometriosis is the blood not only comes out the uterus, out the vagina, but it also comes out the tubes and into the abdomen. So it's not uncommon for people to have pelvic pain. Generally, it starts around close to the period, kind of clusters cyclically, right by your period. But when it becomes more significant and the severity is worse, it may be kind of just all the time. And sometimes people have it when they defecate or have bowel movements. It can be when they're sexually active. It can be when they're urinating. They might feel squeezing motions. The difficulty with pelvic pain when someone comes to the office, it is so multifactorial, because not only do you have your GI and GU system, so your reproductive organs, but you've got your bladder, you've got your bowel, stress, depression, ureters, like if you had some type of a stone, they can all manifest in the abdomen. So it can be really difficult. And then past that, everybody's pelvic pain control can be totally different. You know, some people have their period and they're knocked on the ground and can't go to work for 3 days. And then you've got someone who says, ooh, I think I had a cramp. I'm going to go to work and work out and do all these different things. So everybody's pain level is different. And so as a gynecologist, we have to tease out, like, are you just trying to get out of work? Are you like really having a difficult time with this and there's something significantly happening, you know, and kind of just teasing it out. The difficulty, I think, in your situation is that there were a lot of emergency room visits, and I would encourage people when they have those situations to really identify an OBGYN and work closely with that person, because I you get a sense of your patient. And so if I'm like, this patient is pretty calm and normal all the other times, and now she's like wigging out and she's seen me 3 or 4 times, there might be something that's happening here. That's when you do all your extra tests and you do all these extra things. Now,
but is it true that it could be, they said they could not see anything on an ultrasound?
Yes, so that is true. So endometriosis, now granted, you could have a big, large cyst, which is how I'm assuming it's called an endometrioma, which is, I'm assuming, how you ended up losing your ovary. Mm-hmm. You could have a big goomba in there. And yeah, that's a reason. Let's, you know, go ahead and, you know, identify that. But endometriosis is not found on a pelvic ultrasound. The diagnosis, truthfully, of endometriosis is by doing a surgery, taking a look with a camera and sampling a tissue and sending it off to the pathologist. That is the true definition of endometriosis, because if you take a sample, send it to the pathologist, and they say, yep, looks like it's blood, you know, in there, then you would say, oh, yep, that's definitely endometriosis. Here's the thing. With endometriosis, if you decide not to do the surgery thing, the treatment is the same, which is hormonal. And so even though someone may not be sexually active or, you know, are menopausal, or, you know, I guess not menopausal, but perimenopausal, you would still end up using hormones, because the thought process is if you decrease the amount of blood someone has, you can decrease the implantation of those blood in the abdomen, you can decrease that pain and decrease all of these little, you know, clusters of blood in the abdomen. So it really is hormonal, whether it's birth control pills, a depo shot, an IUD. But if people are still having significant pain, and I think 8 visits to the ER would certainly be considered that, then surgery, a diagnostic laparoscopy, which is essentially like a small camera, like the end of a pen in the abdomen to take a look, would be worth it. The difficulty is that you always have to risk benefit it. So, you know, I'm not going to take someone for their very first, you know, painful period to the OR, because what happens if I hit their bowel and they have to now poop out of their abdomen into a bag for the rest of their life? You know, so you always have to kind of like weigh it out. But if you're in that much pain, then it's worthwhile to go ahead and investigate, because as in your case, there was a big cyst on your ovary, it's all over your bowels, and, you know, by cleaning it up would be really helpful. And it's not uncommon for patients with endometriosis to have to need surgery like every 3-4 years to be able to kind of just clean up that pelvis. But in the meantime, doing things like hormonal methods would be helpful, because then, again, you're decreasing all of that blood being deposited in the abdomen.
And so if you have endometriosis, even if they remove what is in there, mm-hmm. you're still at risk of it coming back, because you're still producing estrogen.
Because you're still producing estrogen, and that blood is not only coming out, but it's also going out the tubes and into the abdomen. So you really haven't fixed the cause.
Okay. Time for one last question before we go. And that is, someone writes, we are monogamous lesbians. We haven't had sex with men, either of us, in the past 15 years, and we've only had sex with each other. At what age can we no longer have pap smears?
So the recommendation in those situations is, the recommendation to stop screening in general is 65 years old or older, as long as there has not been a history of microinvasive cancer. The recommendations now are that if you've had 3 pap smears that have been negative, you know, in a row, then you can also consider stopping. So even though this person has been with the same sex partner for, you know, however long, if they've ever been exposed in the past, there could still be HPV that could be hanging around and could cause an issue when they're, you know, in their 50s.
Okay, so if you had three totally negative, totally fine pap smears in a row, and you're with the same partner, and that partner also is not sleeping with other people, you could stop pap smears altogether.
I think that would be fine. However, I would still encourage pelvic exams, because you still have your ovaries. Pap smears only check for cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. They're not checking the rest of your internal organs. So even though these women may still be at decreased risk for cervical cancer, there can always be a risk for uterine cancer. So it's important to be evaluated. And there's always a risk of ovarian cancer. So important to have those ovaries checked out.
Well, thank you so much. This has been really eye-opening, and we covered a lot of ground, and I hope it was helpful for listeners. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's delightful to be here. Thanks.
Dr. Sheila Lowenzon is the Assistant Chief of Obstetrics and Gynecology at a large multi-specialty practice in California, and the author of the groundbreaking book, Yes, I Have Herpes. You can go to her website, drsheilalowenzon.com, or you can follow her on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Dr. Sheila, GYN. I want to remind all of you that next week I'm headed to Dallas, Texas for tons of events, including October 21st, Sex Positions from Mild to Wild. October 22nd, I'm doing a cultural competency training for therapists on BDSM and polyamory. And that night, I'm doing Kick It Up a Notch, Taking Sex to the Next Level at Sarah's Secret at their Plano, Texas location. All of these events and how you get tickets for them and how you register for them are on my website. Go to puckerup.com, click on tour, and I hope to see you in Texas. I haven't been there in quite some time, and I think Texas needs a little bit of Tristan, don't you? I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when I'll be doing my show from Dallas. And I hope, although it hasn't been confirmed yet, and that's on me, not on her, to speak to Professor Lynn Camella about her brand new book, Vibrator Nation. So until then, you can find me online. You can go to facebook.com/asktristan. I'm on Twitter at Tristan Taramino and at Sex Out Loud Radio. And I'm on Instagram at Tristan Taramino. Until then, take some time to talk about sex, hopefully with your gynecologist, out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.